session number 216503.
We was in Malta Harbour Friday afternoon, and we got to know we were sailing Monday for home. Saturday before that, we were told we'd to go to Salerno. They'd made a landing at Salerno, but they were being driven back to the sea. There was Warspite, Valiant, cruiser, big American cruiser, and a big hospital ship set off together. We set off together from Malta. We arrived in Salerno about 9 o'clock. I think it was Saturday morning, and started to bombard straight away. We sent a marine officer ashore with an escort, and outside the other side of Salerno town and the harbour was a range of hills, and at back of these hills was, we were told, there was a Panzer division waiting to come through and drive our troops off the beach. And the Royal Marine officer went to the top of these hills and directed the Warspite's fire onto the Panzer with a lot of success. They never got to the beach in the Panzer. And we managed to get our lads ashore. The hospital ship, meanwhile, had been hit and was sinking. The cruiser had gone to help the hospital ship. We were bombarding. I was at lookout above the bridge on a platform of a cabin, big steel cabin it was, what housed the radar department. And I was on top of there with a Oricon gun and lookout that. Watch I was. I happened to look up very high in the sky, and I saw three vapour trails, which to me were vapour trails. The plane was flying very high. Wasn't really, well, it wasn't going to do any damage bombing from that height. Anyhow, I reported it to the bridge, and it was acknowledged. And as I watched, I kept my eye on these three vapour trails. Two of them left the main trail and came down, and they both, vapour trails, were flying bombs. The Germans had just started trying them out. We'd been warned about them. One hit the Warspite in the boiler room and one went through the quarterdeck, just missing the ammunition lockers, cordite for the 15-inch guns. The boiler room, the one that went through the boiler room, flashed past me. I could have nearly have touched it. It was just like a big torpedo with wings. It went straight through the deck, no flash, just a dull thump. And it had blown the boiler room out of the Warspite. There were about 40 men down there, killed instantly. The ship immediately came to a standstill with no electricity, nothing to keep the guns going at all. Two big American tugs were summoned. They were outside the harbour, and they were real big tugs. Came alongside and started to pull us out of Salerno. As we came out, the Valiant came in to take our place. She was a sister ship, exactly like the Warspite. So the Jerry's, when they came back to do a bit of photography, wouldn't know we'd been hit. It was dusk by now, and these tugs started to tow us down the Italian coast. It was night time, the ship was sinking, the pumps were going like mad to keep everything afloat. Nothing worked. Some injured on the upper deck. Most of them were in the boiler room, we couldn't get to those, they were dead. They towed us through the Straits of Messina, and it's only a narrow strip of water, and it's very strong and uncontrollable, really. And we broke away from the tugs, and the Warspite started to go round in circles through the Straits of Messina. On the mainland of Italy, the volcano Etna, Mount Etna, was erupting. I thought to myself, here I am on a sinking ship, there's a volcano erupting over there. What are we doing here? And we were coming home the day before, we were going home. Anyhow, the tugs managed to get us back in control again and took us into Malta.
Can you go through the way in which the flying bombs hit the war spike again, please? Can you just go over and just repeat what in detail what you said before?
Well, they were flying three vapour trails in the sky. One vapour trail remained and the other two broke away, came down towards the war spike. We knew what they were then, tried to hit them with fire, which was impossible. One bomb went into the quarterdeck at an angle and went off. The other one came down and I could have really, if I'd have put my hand out, I'd have touched it. It was that big. It was like a torpedo with short stubby wings and a tail at the back of it. Saw that in a flash, instant flash. Always remember that. It went straight down through the ship's deck, and I think the warspite had 16 inches of armour plating on the upper deck. It went through that, straight through the deck. There was no flash, nothing at all, just a dull thud. And the ship stopped. Engine stopped, every gun stopped firing. They couldn't do anything. And then the panic started, really. Could we keep the water out of that boiler room? First of all, they'll seal it off, watertight doors, as far as back as they could. Then these two tugs came alongside and towed us out of Salerno.
What colour was it?
Dull grey colour. But that had been flying below the plane. The plane had been flying at one height and it had two bombs gliding along, these glider bombs, and they were controlled from that plane. It must have been a marvellous feat what that pilot did, or might not have been a pilot, or somebody in control of the bombs. Straight down to the war spot and hit her.
How frightening was it for you?
Well, the shock of it, I was on this gun, but I wasn't strapped in because I wasn't looking. I was just sat on the seat with my glasses, binoculars. I fell off the seat. I fell about 12 foot onto a deck below. An officer fell on top of me. Another rating fell on top of him. We were all come, the shock, there must have been a blast of some kind, but we didn't know it. And it dropped. And this officer, I always remember the officer saying, "Keep down, there's something big going to happen." He expected the ship to blow, same as the Barham went. She just blew, but that was with a torpedo. But ours was with these bombs. But nothing happened, only everything stopped. Deathly silence on the ship for a bit. Then bugles, they had to resort to bugle calls then to get men down to help out and help the wounded. They couldn't help them in the boiler room because they were just burnt to a cinder. We didn't even bury him at sea, so there mustn't have been anything. There was about five or six injured with flying steel as it had gone through the deck. Steel had broke off and whipped across the mess decks and caught one or two of them. They were badly cut. And that was all, really. We didn't see any dead at all. But it was 40 lads gone. That was the bombs. And after they got us into Malta, they sent divers down. And divers wouldn't go under the ship. We were that near the bottom of Malta Harbour. And they said the day after, there was a special ship coming alongside to pour concrete into the boiler room to seal it off. And it was special concrete that, as it was pumped in and met seawater, it solidified. with no gear, had nothing to change with, all the locker rooms had been flooded. All I had was a shirt, pair of socks, pants, shorts, and sandals, and my cap. The morning after, we stayed on board ship, we didn't leave the ship. Oh, by the way, as we entered harbour, there was two battleships in the harbour and a carrier, all lined up cheering us in. They should have been with us at Salerno, never mind cheering us in, you know. Anyhow, they all cheered us in, and they could see the war spark was right. I could put my hand from the upper deck and touch the sea. It was nearly that close, but there's still pumps were going and watertight doors were holding. Anyhow, the day after, a message went round the ship. There's a notice board, reported to have every seaman to report to the notice board. 200 of the crew were being sent home to England that had been on the longest. I got there and my name was on in the 200. So that was just 2 years after leaving Ganges. In the morning, these 200, we went to the Strathmore, a liner in Malta Harbour, and we set sail for England. I don't know how long it took us to get to England, but we arrived in Gurwick.
What kind of voyage was that?
Oh, it was a nice voyage, nothing at all, we had nothing to do. But they couldn't provide us with any clothing. And the nearer it got to England, the colder it got. Anyhow, we arrived in Gurwick, and they got us off to Strathmore and put us straight on the train. And the train had all the blinds drawn, and we weren't allowed to open the blinds. If it stopped at any station, we hadn't to speak to anybody. We hadn't to tell them what ship we were off or where we'd come from or anything. And we arrived in Chatham, direct from Gurwick, straight to Chatham on that ship, and arrived there on Saturday morning.
Did they all obey the security provisions?
We had to do
provisions?
Yeah. The Royal Marines were on board as well, and they were there to keep a good order and everything. We got well fed on the train, we got a meal on the train that had been provided for us. And we arrived in Chatham Barracks. We weren't allowed to walk from the Chatham station to the dockyard. We were put in lorries and moved into the dockyard. Once we got into the dockyard, they lined us up and they told us, now, we're getting you on survivor's leave as quick as possible. First of all, go and get new kit. Go and get new pay books, which your pay book in the Navy is the main thing. You've got to have that. It has your identification on, your number, everything about you. We got all that. And the last job was we got to paid and a warrant to come home on leave. Got paid. With no money, with nothing. Right, we got to the pay section, and it was a Wren officer in charge. This was Saturday afternoon, 2 o'clock. We'd been busy, we'd done without a meal, we'd dashed from one place to another getting kit, everything. And there was about 30 of us arrived at the pay group. And we were led by a petty officer Stoker. He'd been in the Navy, well, he had 3 badges. He'd been in the Navy about 15 years. And this Wren officer said, "What do you lot want?" Also, remember, this PO said, "Well, we've been survivors, we've come to be paid, then we can go on leave." She said, "You'll have to come back on Monday morning, we're closed now." He went across to her, he got hold of her. He was deadly, he was wrong, he could have been court-martialed, he could have been so many days in jail. He said, "If you don't pay us now, I will throw you through the window." That was the actual words he said. And she let out a shout, and another officer came, a lieutenant commander, a man, Lieutenant Commander Navy, over her, pay Bob, and he said, "What's happening here?" And she told him. He said, "Get these men paid." He said, "And you forget about it. Get out of sight, get paid and get away to the PO." And he came to him and told him, "You'd done right." We got paid, caught the train in Gillingham, Chatham, caught the train in Chatham, and went up. I came home to Preston. 14 days leave. So after that, I came back to Chatham, thinking I'd have a nice easy job ashore now. I'd done my bit at Med and been bombed and all like that. And I went down to the RPO, that's the regulating petty officer again, and reported. And he, "Oh yes," he said, "Gardner, you're going to HMS Dittany."
"HMS what?"
"Dittany." I said, "Oh, whereabouts is it?" He said, I don't know what it is." He said, "All I know, you have to report to Gurrock. That's in Scotland, on the clan." He said, "Here's your warrant. Get up there, take your time." He said, "No, you know." So I came up to Preston, got off the train at Preston. I thought, well, he's told me to take my time. I'll nip home and tell my parents where I'm going, you know, what's happened. Told my dad, like, "Oh," he said, "it'll be a little training school up in Scotland." I said, "Oh, you know." So I got to Gurrock and reported to the RTO, which was where all the Navy men had to report to. I forgot what it stands for, RTO, but I had to report there. And I said, "HMS Dittany." "Never heard of it," he said. Well, I said, "I've been told, I've come up from Chatham, like." He said, "Yes, I can see that." He said, "Here now, go down to Greenock, not Gurrock." There's two names, nearly it's there. So I got to Greenock, went there to the RPO, and it was a wren. I said, "Could you tell me where HMS Dittany is?" She said, "Just 1 minute." She goes through this book. And in front of her office was the River Clyde and all the hills on the far side. She said, "It's there, right over there." I said, "Whereabouts?" She said, "There, right in the middle of the Clyde." I looked and there was a dirty little Corvette right in the middle of the Clyde. I said, "Are you sure that's the Dittany?" She said, "Yes, I'm certain." She said, "Anyhow, I'll ring down to the harbour and we'll get a boat and they can take you out to it."
How do you spell Dittany?
D-I-T-T-A-N-Y. Flower class Corvette, made in Toronto. So it must be a Canadian flower, the Dittany. I've never heard of it in England. Anyhow, I got to the Dittany. There was a PO on board, a sub-lieutenant, RNR, and the cox, the buffer, what we call the buffer. He was the chief PO in charge of seamen. And I reported to him, he said, "Oh, yes." Well, he said, you might as well go on leave now. He said, "You're entitled to 7 days leave, just joining the ship." Oh, I thought, that's grand. So he went to the officer, he said, "Abel Seaman Gardner's reporting." He said, "I'm sending him on 7 days leave." "You can't do that," he said. "We may sail at any time." He said, "We've a crew of 8. We've no engine, something wrong with the engine." He said, "How are we going to sail?" And he laughed in the office. He said, "Right, send him on leave." So I had 7 days leave, then came back there to the Dittany, which by then...
How did you spend the leave?
Back home in Preston. By then, we had a full crew on board. I was 21 then. And I was the oldest seaman on board ship. There's two more ABs beside me. So every Corvette, before it goes to sea, has to go up to Tobermory in Scotland to work up, well, to work the crew up into a efficient crew. And in charge of there was an admiral, I don't know his real name, but they called him Monkey Face. He was at least 60 odd, little beard, about 5'6". He was a terror. He had a crew around him, his own crew, and they were on there to give you everything, every situation that could happen to you on a corvette at sea in the Atlantic. He'd come on board ship and he'd say, torpedo bomber approaching, and you didn't do anything else, you manned the gun and you fired it at where he'd told you to. To be on top like that all the time. He'd come on board, he'd say, abandon ship. Every man on the ship had to jump over the side. And this was in Scotland. He was efficient, he knew his job, but he was a bit too efficient. There was an Australian corvette in when we were there. And one night he sent his crew out, and they boarded the Australian corvette and took the flag from the mast, what had been tied up ready for the morning after. And so they took a few things, and then he signalled the Australian, where was the watch at night? Where were the guards for the ship? Would they come ashore and collect their flag and something else from the town hall steps? He showed them up proper. Anyhow, they did. They went and they did this thing.
Did you see it happen?
No, we saw the signal. The signal what they made to the Australians went round all the fleet. Everybody knew then. But what we did see happen, the Australians landed from the corvette the night after, stole his gig, and carried it and put it on the town hall steps. And he congratulated them on me. It was quite fair, you know. It was. All that kind of competition was happening while he was there, what you could do, get away with, and what you couldn't do. And then before you left Tobermory, every man had to go, that wanted dental treatment had to go and have dental treatment. I had a tooth, it wanted filling, the filling had come out. And we went ashore, three of us from our ship, because there was no sick bay facilities on board a corvette. We'd one man who was called a sick bay tiffy. He passed at Red Cross or something. He had a Red Cross on his sleeve. He could do minor things, you know. But he couldn't draw teeth or operate. And if you was at sea in a corvette with tooth, there was nowhere you could go. So I went to this dentist, and it was in an old farmhouse just outside Tobermory, Royal Naval Dental. Little old farmhouse it was. You sat down at the bottom of these stairs, and there was wooden stairs up, and at the top was the dentist. And at the room at the side, there was a lad sat on like a bike, pedalling it with his hands and that. And that was for the drill, for you to drill your teeth. I'd only to have mine refilled. I was quite brave, you know. Shouted me up, I went up, had it for refill and everything. To the two behind me from our ship wanted fillings doing. So I came down and said, it's primitive up there. And then this lad sat there a bit, he sat there a bit, and he could hear his mate up above, oh, 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 groaning away. He said, I'll go to sea like this. He said, I'm not going to have anything done here. He said, I'll wait till we pull in at Sub Harbour. He said, then I'll go to a dentist if I have to pay myself. He said, I'm not going up there. So that was it. We all came back to the ship and he got away with it. Then we set sail from Tobermory to Londonderry. Picked a convoy up in Londonderry to take to Gibraltar. There'd be about four corvettes, three destroyers, and at the back of the convoy was two converted fishing boats, and their nets from the side for picking survivors up, which was a good start for a convoy. We set off from Londonderry about the third night at sea. We lost three ships. Just boom, boom, that flashes on the horizon, and we dash about, drop depth charges. We never went below decks on the corvette. We slept on the upper deck every night, even though we had to sleep with tarpaulins over us in the rain. It wasn't safe. There were a wolf pack or something. The night after, we lost another two. And then we got another destroyer escort came up from Gibraltar and joined us. And from then on, it was pretty plain sailing until we got into Gibraltar. We left the convoy there to sail through the Med, and we carried on to Freetown. And from Freetown, that was where I was for the rest of the war. Freetown, Dakar, Lagos.
Doing what?
Convoy. Ship, different ships. One time we convoyed a floating dock. And then, well, I should be, after I'd been in Freetown about a year and a half, we were setting sail for home.
Any memories of serving off West Africa or going ashore?
Oh, going ashore in West Africa was really pleasant. There was nothing there. There was no town as such. But there was plenty of nice beaches. We could get fruit, coconuts, mangoes. Always had a good swim. We did nothing but swim there. In harbour, well, it was a dirty harbour, was Freetown. And there was a big ship in harbour, which was a mother ship to all the corvettes. It never left harbour. It was called the Philoctetes, HMS Philoctetes. And they had a cinema on board. We could go up there at night, and you sat on the upper deck and watch pictures. That was when he was in harbour.
What do you mean it was a dirty harbour?
Everything was floated on top of the water, you know. It wasn't harbour you could swim in. If you wanted to have a swim, you had to go ashore, catch one of the naval buses that took you around to one of these sandy beaches, you know. And it was also sharks in the harbour and barracudas. I'd never seen those before, but when we emptied what we call the gash, the spur food, over the side after we'd had a meal, they used to come darting in, these barracudas, for the meat, and anything that was eatable, they'd get it. But the blackies weren't afraid to swim in the water. They used to come alongside in canoes, and if you threw a coin in the water, they'd dive in after it. They weren't afraid of them. We never knew why. We never saw one bitten or anything with a shark or a barracuda, a blackie, but we were forbidden to swim in harbour. It was dangerous. Lagos was a nice port. Dakar was French. Somerville had bombarded that during the war. The French Navy was in there, and Somerville had gone in and bombarded it, Dakar. But there was no damage when we went. It was a very nice place. And by then, I was the ship's. I used to go ashore. I was a postman. Every morning, I'd collect any mail, go ashore to naval offices, take our mail, any mail for us, bring it back, just deliver it to the lads. That meant I could get ashore every morning. And I used to go shopping for anybody wanted anything. They'd give me their money, and I'd go to these. They wanted sandals or anything like that. I could buy them for them and bring them back on board. Well, we were due to go to Gibraltar to pick a floating dock up. No, we were due to go to Dakar to bring this floating dock back. we were in Lagos then, and as we set out from Lagos, I started with malaria. That was the only thing I ever had in the Navy.